morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. For those who are superstitious, it's Friday the 13th, Tim. Ooh, are you scared? Are you going to sleep with the lights on tonight, you big scaredy cat?
I might. That's none of your business, though.
It is funny. I take the kids. We go to the hardware store a lot because I'm getting odds and ends for the house and this and that with the house build. I need stuff. I'm cutting wood. I got to get bar oil. I got to get, you know, a blade sharpener. I buy a new chainsaw blade every year. Chainsaw chain, I should say. But anyways, we go into these stores, Lowe's and Home Depot and Costco even, and they have their Halloween decorations up. And it's funny. My kids are terrified of them. Not all of them, but the younger kids. So we went yesterday. I took the two young ones, Eleanor and Esther. Like, pushed a button to get the animatronics to work, and they're terrified. Some of these ones are very scary. Like, they're just spooky and creepy, and some are, you know, fun-loving and kid-friendly. But it's fun, Tim. It's fun to kind of relive it through your kids. But anyways, were you a big Halloween guy? Would you go out, you know, ripping around? You and
Gronk? Yeah, I was lucky enough to grow up in a pretty nice neighborhood that was like a one entrance and then like a big loop. So Ooh. It was very safe, no through traffic, where people all over town were dropping their kids off on my street to trick or treat. So it was really nice, very safe. It was awesome. We knew which houses had the big candy bars and which ones to skip and all that. So yeah, we loved it. It was a good time.
Remember, do you remember last year when we went? I think I told the story, my Gabrielle lost my car keys. Just like, I still remind her of that.
Or what?
Never did. We never found them. Well, hi, it's like a needle in a haystack. We went to about 100 houses and she was ripping around her bag that had my keys in them. And I did not put the keys in there, everybody. She took it upon herself to take the keys out of the car and put it in her bag for whatever reason.
And it was one of those smart keys that are like $300 to replace, right?
False. It was one of the old, it was like an old key that had like just a open and close and an actual key. That car doesn't have a smart key. It has old school, put it in and turn. But she lost it. And so we had to call someone to come and pick us up. It was just very, very sweet of her. But yeah, Halloween's coming up. It's exciting. The kids love the decorations. You know what I don't love about my kids, Tim? And you don't have this problem. And I'll do it. I'll lump my wife in with this issue too. I don't know how many of you out there live with women. I live with 9 of them. If you call my daughters women, they are, you know, females. They shower and they have a lot of hair. I get that. The thing I don't understand, Tim, and I'm going to maybe bounce this off of you. When you are finished with your shower, do you dry off in the shower? Because we have one of those tub showers, you know, our house is not large right now. So it's a tub, it's a shower combo, it's an insert. Pretty common. Do you dry off in the tub / shower? Yes or no?
Mostly. Sometimes I'll finish on the mat, you know, but I don't leave the mat until I'm dry.
Yeah. It seems like common sense to dry off initially in the tub. For whatever reason, and I don't know if this is just a Scott household thing, my kids and my wife is included in this. When I go into the bathroom after they're done showering, it looks like they just didn't have the shower curtain closed at all. There's water all over the floor. It's incredible. Everywhere. And I'm talking covered. And I look at them and I'm just like, what happened? And I don't say this to my wife because she's, you know, my partner. I'm not going to critique her. It just boggles my mind. It blows me away. I'm like, how the heck does that much water get on the floor? And this is not great radio, but it's just like, let me know what happens in your house. Are we doing this wrong? How do you dry off in the shower? Because when I get out of the shower, I'm completely dry except for the bottom of my feet. I go head to toe dry off in the shower. I step on the mat that dries my feet, and then I'm on my way. There's not one drop of water on the bathroom floor. My kids, as soon as the shower turns off, I feel like they're jumping out of the shower and like a wet dog just shaking off everywhere. And I feel like my wife does the same thing because I walk in and I can't find a dry tile to stand on.
Do you say something though? Like, have you said, girls, this is how you do it? Like, teach them. Show them how to do it.
Well, yeah, I say dry off in the shower. And obviously they don't listen. I don't know how the message gets lost. And it's just just different. There's little things you have to teach your kids you don't realize. How do you wipe your bum after you take a deuce? Stuff like that. And it's like, you got to go in and show them. And so, and like, I'm not a girl, so I don't know if girls wipe differently than boys. So I'm like telling my wife, can you get in there and help them out? Because I don't know how it works for women. I think it's in the same spot. I don't know. And so just these little things that you have to deal with, and you forget every kid. And it's like, oh, you got to teach them that. And that's right. Okay. So they don't know. They don't know how to do that. But now I got to get them all in the bathroom again. And you see my bathroom. We can barely fit one person in there. And I go, okay, so when we're done with the shower, we stay in the shower and dry off because it gets wet. Ugh, it drives me just crazy. Anyways, moving on. I was going to talk about fruit flies too, but it's just too much. I don't. My blood's already boiling. The fruit flies are going to send me over the top. It's just global warming is doing the number on the fruit flies this year. I feel like they're just everywhere. Thousands of them, Tim. Thousands. You probably don't have them in North Carolina, do you?
I've seen them more, not a ton, but a few here and there. And I didn't see any the past couple summers down here. So
crazy.
A little uptick.
It's bonkers. But you know what else? Let's get to the show. We got to talk about Bet365, because that's what this episode is brought to you by. That's why we're here. The people at Bet365, they're our proud partners of this podcast, Dropping the Gloves. So you should open an account today with Bet365. You can bet on a huge range of markets, Tim. Huge. So whatever the sport, hockey, basketball, football, baseball, whatever the moment, regular season, preseason, playoffs, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA for all of your gambling needs. Win some money. Send it to us. I need it. I'm broke. Dead broke, Tim. Anyways, moving on. We did our preview last show for the Metro. We're moving on to the Atlantic. Everyone's favorite division for some reason. I think if you did a poll of the entire world, the Atlantic would be everyone's favorite division. There's polarizing teams. There's up-and-coming teams or teams that are always underperforming. There's original six teams. There's just a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. And this offseason, par for the course. Everything went as usual. Very interesting offseason for all these teams. And it starts with the Stanley Cup champions, the Florida Panthers. What did they do this offseason, Tim?
Yeah, not a whole lot, which is probably a good thing for them. They lost Brandon Montour. The biggest loss probably of this roster, and he basically got priced out by the fact that he played really well, and they had to commit their money to Sam Reinhart, which is a good problem to have. But Montour has moved on to greener pastures, as well as some rentals: Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Tarasenko, Stolarz, the backup goalie, Cousins, who is an easy guy to hate, and Okposo, all out the door. And not a whole lot. Adam Boqvist, you know, former first round pick defenseman, kind of a bottom pairing guy at this point. Nosek and Greer, who are solid depth role players. Nate Schmidt, I think, is probably a solid pickup for them, but mostly it's the same lineup. And if you're a Panthers fan, that's a good thing. You don't need an exciting offseason. You want to bring all the pieces back. They've got that core in place. Barkov, Tkachuk, Reinhardt, Bennett, Verhaeghe, Forsling, Ekblad, obviously the goaltenders. Like, this whole group's coming back, and there's no reason to think that they won't compete again for a cup.
Tim, I hate to correct you. It's Jesper Boqvist, not Adam Boqvist. It's a common mistake, and I don't want to do it on air, but I have to do it.
But I getting thought back, Jesper was out for the season or something. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
I don't want to correct you again, but he's not. He's okay.
He's still only in. One correction, John.
Yeah, but back to Florida.
It's Adam. It's Adam.
What's Adam?
It's Adam Boqvist.
Is where in Florida?
They're both there. They're both there. Interesting. So
Adam's a defenseman. Jesper's the forward.
Will you take it back?
I take it back. I apologize. Are they brothers?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's pretty cool. Didn't they have a pair of brothers Florida playing for him before? I can't remember. We'll circle back to that. The Stalls. That's correct. All right. Moving on to the Florida Panthers. The luxury of being the Stanley Cup champion is players want to play for your team. It's just, and then being in Florida, it's a double whammy. The Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers have the benefits of those two little carrots dangling in front of these free agents who want to play there. Players take team-friendly deals, and these veterans, they have the pick of the litter. So when they go and scan the UFAs, they can go, okay, we'll probably get whoever we want. And so they can go out and get whoever they think fits with their team, and I think they did a great job this year. Thomas Nozick is a great player. Jesper Boqvist, Adam Boqvist are very good. And Nate Schmidt, he's underperformed the last few years. He was fantastic in Winnipeg. He was fantastic in Vancouver. I think he's a really good player. And then the benefit of letting Brandon Montour go last year, Nico Mikkola, played really, really good. I know he's not an offensive guy, but everybody was talking about Gustav Forsling, how great he played, and rightfully so, his coming out party. I think Nico Mikkola got overshadowed a little bit because he played so incredibly good team. He was so important to this team, arguably better than Aaron Ekblad down the stretch. Really, really solid. So the benefit of having him and Forsling, it just eased the sting of Brandon Montour going away because you couldn't afford him. So their top four is as good as anybody else in the league. And Aaron Ekblad all of a sudden sees himself. He was once the cornerstone of that team, the only real cog on the back end for a long time. He could arguably be the third or fourth best defenseman on this team going into this season. And that's a good problem to have because Aaron Ekblad has played a lot of hockey. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, and he might need a little bit of a break. But, you know, the Panthers didn't need to do too much. They won the Stanley Cup. They won it in their fashion. They lost a couple vets. Who cares? They kept their top nine. That super effective third line, they lose Tarasenko. That's a tough pill to swallow, but you got Lusterein and you got Lundell. That was such a strong third line. Their top six does not change whatsoever. So I think this team looks pretty solid going into the season, Tim, don't you?
Yeah, so let's talk about the goalies for a second. Sergei Bobrovsky was probably the best goaltender in the world last year, obviously a huge part of them winning the Cup. He's getting older. He doesn't really show signs of slowing down, but I don't know if you can expect him to carry that same workload. Not that he needs to in order for them to be contenders again, but Spencer Knight is also waiting in the wings, and he's going to want to take on a bigger workload as well. He's drafted 3 years ago, still only 23, but he's only played like 70 or 80 games in the NHL so far. So he's going to be, you know, looking to get a bigger share of the starts, maybe 30, 35 starts this year compared to the 23 I think he had last year. And I'm still curious to see whether he is the goaltender of the future. You know, if any Florida Panthers fans want to chime in on the comments or whatever and let us know what the vibe on him is, because he's obviously a friend of the show and a Boston College player. We're hoping for him to take those reins. But yeah, I think the goaltending thing is interesting. But regardless, like the core we already mentioned, even if you get 75% of last year from Bobrovsky and you have that core, it's hard to see a team in this division beating them in the playoffs. They're still that good.
Yeah, Spencer Knight, obviously, he went into the NHL's assistant program, and not for your typical reasons, you know, drugs, alcohol, that sort of thing. He went in for a mental, you know, issue. He was obsessive compulsive disorder. And so I've never obviously had that, not obviously, but I've never dealt with that. But I think that deals with just you're trying to control everything and you're trying to just keep everything in order, and anything out of order just really sets you off. And as a goaltender, I've seen goaltenders who have that tendency to, like, you know, do this and that. I played with a guy in college, Cam Ellsworth, who had, you know, a certain amount of pennies in his stall. He would count them before every time. He would do the warm-ups, the same everything. So goalies like to have everything regimented. And I think with Spencer Knight, it was just spiraling out of control. He did an interview with the Hockey News last year and kind of detailed his struggle with that. So he left the team. He left the AHL team, and he went away to try to deal with this. And he said he's come through on the other side stronger. So hopefully he can bounce back. But we had him on the show. He was a great kid, super, super confident, super friendly, and hopefully he can find his game again, because the luxury of him is he's an incredible goalie. I likened him to a Jeremy Swayman, where the future of the Florida net, there was a time when people were talking about, well, we can get rid of Bobrovsky. We have Spencer Knight. He's the goalie of the future and possibly the present. So Stolarz played great last year when he was called upon. Good, good goalie. Now he's gone on to bigger and better things in Toronto. But Spencer Knight, I think everyone's hoping Bill Zito in Florida is the guy to lighten the load for Bobrovsky this year. And I think he has that capability. And hopefully he's mentally up to the task, because he's a solid goaltender, Tim. I mean, you can just throw him out there. And just like that's Linus Allmark, Jeremy Swayman. That's the skill lever that we're talking about here with the Spencer Knight. He is so incredibly good. And I think people forgot about that because he just went away for the better part of a year. But he is a good, good goaltender. If you can just lock him in and Bobrovsky, and like Spencer Knight does make a lot of money. And so they did pay him because they saw the potential. He makes $4.5 million. So the Panthers have almost $15 million locked up in these two guys. So they better darn well be good. But when you have those two guys in the back end, you have the seasoned veterans you have on the decor with Ekblad, Forsling, Mikkola, and Kulikov, and you bring in an Nate Schmidt, who's a solid guy, and you have your top nine returning, you have to be the prohibitive favorites to win the Stanley Cup. So Stanley Cup hangover, we'll see. But going into this season in the Atlantic Division, they're the team to beat. There's nobody else in my eyes who challenges them. So let's move on to the team last year who came second place, a surprise second place, your Boston Bruins. I'm coming into this season last year, so many question marks. How is this team going to respond from the epic collapse from the year before? President's Trophy winner, losing the first round. Narcissistic, selfish D-bag Patrice Bergeron just spoils the whole Stanley Cup run. We had Nick Foligno on the show. He pretty much just patted me on the back and said, yeah, I agree with you. He should not have been playing. He ruined our chances for a Stanley Cup. He agreed with me 100%. The Bruins surprised everybody last year, and they just carried on. Same old, same old. They just win. They almost won the division, 1 point behind the Florida Panthers, which, in the end of the day, was costly because they had to play the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. But the Boston Bruins had a great regular season. They didn't lose any steps, and it was mainly because of the goaltending core. David Pastrnak had a strong season. Brandon Marchand is slowly but surely regressing in his play. Injuries are catching up with him. He's not the same player he was 5 years ago, let alone 2 years ago. But, Tim, the Boston Bruins, what did they get to up this offseason? What did they get to up to this offseason? That's a tough string of words to put together.
It can be. They were busy on July 1st, two of the top guys on the market in Zadorov and Elias Lindholm, both guys they were linked to. Lindholm goes back years. They also brought in Korpisalo from the Allmark trade, and they have a PTO with Tyler Johnson, which is an interesting, you know, depth pickup that I'm interested in because, you know, you saw so many of those veteran minimum guys contribute last year, like JVR, like Dan Heinen, some other guys. So they did lose Allmark. Like I said, that's going to be a pretty big loss. I'll talk about the goaltending situation in a second. They lost Jake DeBrusk, where, you know, that was time for both sides to move on. Some rentals like Shattenkirk, Heinen, Forbert, JVR, all out the door. The biggest shadow hanging over this team right now, obviously, is the Jeremy Swayman thing. It feels like an incomplete conversation to even talk about this team right now. We're assuming that he's going to sign, but the next assumption after that is, like, how can he handle that increased workload? What if he gets 50, 55 starts? Is he ready for that? And how does that impact his play in the postseason where he's going to have more miles on the body? He hasn't done that yet. I'm not too worried about it. I think he's ready for that challenge, but it is something to keep an eye on. And then speaking of the goaltenders for a second, Korpisalo was statistically possibly the worst goalie in the league last year. He's been okay. He's been a middle-of-the-pack goaltender in different parts of his career. You have to consider the fact that he was playing in front of or behind a horrible team. They was getting tons of shots. They were just facing, you know, really just no structured defense, all that in Ottawa. And that now he's going to play in front of one of the best defensive teams in the league. He's going to play with what's considered one of the best goalie coach groups in the league that always seems to get more. So I'm hoping that if he gets you somewhere in the low threes, you know, and in a save percentage over 900, I think that's plenty. That's enough for them to make that worth and make the Allmark thing hurt a little bit less. But there's a lot of questions with this Bruins team, and they're still going to rely a lot on a couple of guys. One of those being obviously Swayman, the other being Pastrnak. You need 45 goals. You need 35, 40 wins from two guys. And that's a lot to rely on just a couple of players.
Yeah. Well, the big knock on this team last year was a first line centerman. They did not have it. It was a big need going into last year. They lose Bergeron. They lose Krejci. Who's going to fill that spot? They tried to fill it with Charlie Coyle. They tried to fill it with Pavel Zacha. They tried a number of different people that didn't work. You bring in Elias Lindholm. Tried, tested, and true guy who's really, really solid. He's not an out-of-this-world first-line center, but he's good. You know, he will do what you need him to do. He will get Pastrnak the puck. He'll go into the corners and dig it out. He's a solid player, Tim, and he can put the puck in the net. I think he had 41 year in Calgary. So that checks that box. They needed to shore up the back end. They bring in Nikita Zadorov, the guy whose his stock skyrocketed in the postseason when he was just all over Connor McDavid versus the Edmonton Oilers. He was one of the few guys for Vancouver who showed up in the playoffs. So that's a big win there. The last big question mark is Jeremy Swayman. I think you glossed over this. This is a huge deal. Based on Ray Whitney, his reports, he was saying that the Bruins offered him $6.2 million for 3 years. A pretty good amount of money. Swayman wants 8 years, $9.5 to $10 million. that's like, that's a Grand Canyon of a chasm between these two parties. And based on Swayman's interview he did a couple weeks ago and where the Bruins are at, in my eyes, they're not even close to coming to an agreement. Swayman wants to set the market. He doesn't want to hold the goaltenders back, and the Bruins want to pay him for the work that he's done. So where's the middleman? And Jeremy Swayman doesn't seem like the guy who's going to buckle under pressure. He seems to know his worth. So that, in my eyes, that's the only issue now for the Boston Bruins.
Where does he end up? It's strange because there's so many conflicting reports, and then I pay attention to them and I forget them just as quickly. Cause there's like one day is what you're talking about, it's $6 million. Another one says he wants 10 and a half. Another one says they're close. Another one says they're far apart. And I think the confusion and the muddling of this content is probably not a good sign for where they stand, but I'm still not panicking. I'm still confident they're going to get it done. And just going back to the defense real quick, Zadorov and Andrew Peak, who they brought in the deadline, Charlie McAvoy is 6'1", and he's the shortest defenseman on this back end. They have a tall group, but they have some guys that can skate too, obviously McAvoy, but Lindholm can skate like the wind. Like, they're not so heavy that they're going to be slow, but they can still be physical. And I think Lindholm is probably on the third pairing with Andrew Peak, the way things are going to shake out, which is pretty cool. And then Mason Lowry is one of three, not rookies, but super young kids that's going to be really important to this group. For eating up minutes, stepping into larger roles on the power play, on the penalty kill, in the middle six, and the top four defensemen. Mason Lowry, Matthew Portois, who missed a chunk of time last year with an injury, and Johnny Beecher, who I think you're hoping is your fourth line center. Like, those kids are going to be very, very important to this group that has some questions. We still don't know how they're going to shake up the lineup in terms of, like, does Zaka, does he play wing or center? Does he go on Lindholm's wing now and Charlie Coyle's a two center, or does Charlie drop to three? Like, a lot of things to figure out, but I'm excited about this group, and I feel like they still have that, the top of division mojo, winning a playoff round or two mojo, and until they prove us wrong, that's who we should assume they are.
Yeah, I think this season falls upon Jeremy Swayman. They get him signed, which they inevitably will, and then it's Brad Marchand. Can he revert back to the player he was? And he didn't have a terrible season last year. He had 67 points, something like that. So it's a pretty solid season. But he himself, at the end of the year, he admitted he had three pretty bad injuries last year. He was dealing with a lot of stuff. So if he can come back, be healthy a whole season, that's a huge boost for this team, a team that doesn't have a lot of options on the front end. So look for that. Look for Swayman. The Bruins will be there. You know, they proved me wrong last year. I'm not going to doubt them again. Moving on to a team that was just behind them in the standings, the Toronto Maple Leafs. They finished 102 points last year, which I thought was a good thing. I thought they were going to coast, you know, into the regular season, much like Derek Stepan said when he was on the show, just get to the playoffs and then we'll play. Well, it didn't work out for the Toronto Maple Leafs too well last season. They lost to the Bruins again in the first round, but they put up a good fight. It was strong. Willie Nylander obviously getting hurt, coming back, dragging them to a game seven. They played well, but not good enough to beat the Boston Bruins. They added some pieces. They lost some pieces, and they re-signed some pieces, much like the Toronto Maple Leafs do every offseason. I feel like they have a strong case to be the winners of the offseason. They bring in Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who played fantastic for the Florida Panthers down the stretch, getting first-line power play minutes, really embracing that role as the puck-moving defenseman, with Brandon Montour not playing so great, Aaron Ekblad not playing so great. Offensively, OEL stepped it up big for the Florida Panthers. They just bring in Yanni Hakanpää from the Dallas Stars, a big moose of a defenseman. There were some question marks around him when he signed July 1. Is he injured? Is he not injured? He just finally signed that contract this month, I think, kind of finally went through. So he'll be there. Out Tyler Bertuzzi, out Labushkin, TJ Brody, Klingberg, who was non-existent, Jake Muzzin, Joel Edmondson. A lot of money leaving the Toronto Maple Leafs. They re-signed Max Domi, who played really, really good down the stretch with Austin Matthews. That was arguably their top line. He fit in nicely alongside him. And then they got Chris Tanev at the deadline, and they re-signed him. Pretty good offseason for Brad Treveling for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But this happens every year. You bring in good players. Guys want to play with Matthews and Nylander and Marner, play in the big city, get all the attention and the endorsements. What it comes down to is winning in the playoffs, and they haven't done it yet. But everything, Tim, this offseason was overshadowed by the secondary stuff. John Tavares gets the captaincy stripped. Austin Matthews stepped in as a new captain of the team. And then the Mitch Marner situation. Where does Mitch Marner end up? He is now in the last year of his contract. He's going to be UFA at the end of the season. That's the biggest storyline. What happens there? So what did you think as a whole of the Toronto Maple Leafs offseason? I think they, in my eyes, they did pretty good. But what are you thinking over there, Tim, in North Carolina?
Yeah, no, I do like this. I like the pieces they brought in. I think re-signing Domi and Tanev were probably the two biggest things they did, the most important things. There's a lot of noise, as there always is with this Toronto group, but I love their team on paper. I think they're probably, there's a case to be made that they'll finish at the top of the division in the regular season. It's the same old story. It's just what can they do in the playoffs, and can they get by a Florida or a Tampa or a Boston? Because they're going to play one of those three teams more than likely, and I would still bet against them even if they finish first and they play Tampa in the wild card, for example. So it's just, I don't, one of the things I'm curious about is whether the Tavares captaincy change to Matthews, does this do anything to this team in how they execute? Because you could say a lot of it's just posturing and it's, I don't know, it's more symbolic than anything, but maybe there's a chance that the way that Matthews leads by the team, leads by example, speaks to his team, I don't know, changes some culture stuff. Probably not a whole lot because Tavares is still in the room and not like Tavares is a problem, but I think they're looking for ways to change the way this team executes and competes, and maybe this reflects a new mojo. I think that's what you have to hope for. I think most of us outside of Toronto can happily expect to laugh at them being eliminated in the first round yet again, but I'm hopeful for this group that this means something different, even if on paper they're just about the same.
Here's what I'm hoping happens to Toronto. And I'm usually a naysayer. I usually hate on Toronto. And this is what I think Brendan Shanahan, Brad Treveling, Sheldon Keefe, everybody in the Toronto organization is hoping to. Auston Matthews takes this C and he runs with it and he understands the added weight and responsibility that comes with being the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. When you're not a captain, you can kind of fly under the radar, even in Toronto. As the captain, the buck stops with you. He is now responsible for this team preparing for the games, how they play on the ice, how they interact in the locker room, how they show up to the games. I think everybody in Toronto is hoping that he takes his already phenomenal game to the next level and maybe just take it a little more responsible. Show up to the game in a professional manner, be ready to go. You know, challenge your teammates. Get into the scrums a little bit after the whistle. Just care a little more. I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but it seemed at times throughout his career where he just kind of takes a step back, where you want your captain to jump into the mix. And I'm not talking about scrums. I'm not talking about fighting guys on the bench, in the locker room, taking charge of that room. And I'm not going to bash Johnny T, but he didn't seem like he had the type of personality that guys rally around. He's more of a wet blanket kind of vanilla type guy where you know what you're going to get, Mr. Consistency, but he's not going to rally the troops and no one's going to run through the wall for him. I'm hoping everybody in Toronto is hoping that Auston Matthews turns into that guy. So we'll see what happens. But I think the elephant in the room that we're missing is the goalie situation. Last year, everybody was fired up. You were fired up. Ilya Samsonov is the guy. He's the guy. We finally got him. He's the one we can build around. Did not work out whatsoever. He took a mental break. The team said, we're going to give you enough time to work things through. Didn't he go down to the Toronto Marlies just to work on his game? They gave him some mental time to get his head right. Then he came back and he still was not garbage, but not a great goaltender. They moved on from him. Joseph Woll came in, played really good. They rewarded him with a new contract. He'll make 3.666667 in 25-26, and they bring in Anthony Stolarz from the Florida Panthers, a Stanley Cup champion backup. But what are you getting from the goaltender in Toronto? You have a backup, and you have a young kid who is unproven. Not really young. He's 26. So it's a huge question mark in my eyes that this is the downfall of this team again is the goaltender.
Yeah, I really like Woll. Obviously, just watching every game in the playoffs last year, watching him step up in the big moments. There's a lot to root for. And the same question goes with Swayman, although Swayman's obviously much further along. But like, how can he handle a regular season workload, the ups and downs, the obvious injuries that'll come. Like, how can he face that, and how many minutes can he log, and how does that impact the way that he plays in the playoffs? Because he didn't have to do that last year. So I'm very confident in his abilities. I'm very confident, and obviously they are too, because they have really no choice other than to be. But, and I like Stolarz too. So I'm going to go on the upside of this and be positive about it, that Wall will be their guy and he will take the line share of starts and just be ready to take on that responsibility. And I think you, obviously that's what you have to hope for.
Yeah. You said that last year.
I know.
Verbatim. The same thing. I'm really excited. Samsonov's the guy. I'm going to draft him in fantasy. He's going to be fantastic. So yeah, goaltender is a huge question mark there. I think they've answered the questions up front per se. It all depends on the playoffs. You know, they brought in Max Pacioretty on a PTO. We'll see how that works out. They signed Nick Robertson, who was making waves this offseason, saying he wants to be traded, even though he's done absolutely nothing in the NHL level. Maybe he hasn't gotten his chance, but for a kid making that many waves, it's like, come on, like, let's show me something. So the last question I'll pose to you, Mitch Marner, what does he do? He's got 82 games left on his contract in the regular season, in the playoffs. Is he a Leaf after this season, Tim?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to think he's going to put up another 100 plus points. And I think he's going to be a Leaf. And I think he's part of that team for better or worse. I think they re-sign him. I think they're going to be continually delighted and frustrated by him for the length of his career. I just don't see them letting him go. And we can try to do the math. It's just not our responsibility to do it. They're just going to commit that amount of money to those guys and hope that things change. But yeah, I think he stays as a Leaf for probably life, but certainly the next, whatever, 8 years, whatever the contract turns out to be.
It seems to be trending in that direction, isn't it? The big overhaul they talked about this offseason, how we will make this team different. We will alter this roster. They haven't done anything. And I called it last year. I said, Mitch Marner will not get traded. He will not move in the offseason, and he will walk in free agency. That's where I feel like this is going. I feel like Mitch is just going to walk for nothing. We'll see. So far, I'm trending in the right direction, but the money will be there for him to resign. If Toronto really is serious about keeping this core together, Matthews, Nylander, Marner, Riley, they have a lot of cap space next year. They're losing Johnny T. They're losing his money. So the money is there. You got to resign Matthew Nyes, but Marner's going to want $13, $14 million. Good luck with those three.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Tampa Bay Lightning. There we go. Another great team. They finished fourth in the division last year. They had 98 points, regressed a little bit, but still a very dangerous team. They had a big offseason, Tim. Very, very, very big offseason. What happened to Tampa Bay?
Well, obviously the big signing was Jake Guentzel. Right before free agency started, they traded for him, brought him in for a huge chunk of change, replacing Steven Stamkos, which is something we covered in great detail already. They brought in their old friend Ryan McDonough, J.J. Moser, which was part of the Sergachev trade. Gergensen's, Cam Atkinson's, both veterans playing for near league minimum. Out was Sergachev and Stamkos, who we mentioned already, as well as Matt Dumba, who was, you know, a smaller pickup. This is very much a different team, and it feels weird to have a Tampa Bay Lightning without Steven Stamkos. There's something very strange about it. Hedman, you know, the news is that it's just a matter of a couple of days before he gets the C officially. As I look at this roster, I think there's so much to like about the offense. Obviously, you have Vasilevsky, who's a top three, top five in the league, whatever you want to say. But their defense looks pretty thin. Hedman is still an elite number one, top five defenseman in this league, even though he's getting a little bit up there, but he can still block the minutes. He can still take that up, that role. And then who's the number two after that? Is it Ryan McDonough? He's the second highest paid. Is it Moser? Is it Chernak? Sergachev was so important to that defense, to the special teams, to everything, and to Hedman. And now you don't have him. And I think there's a big gap there. If I'm a optimistic betting man, I think Moser could be a guy that takes a bigger role. I think you're going to have to hope that he does, but there's a lot of questions with this defense. And after those four, it falls off. So this could be a pretty big exposition for them.
Yeah. This team is not as good as they were last year. You know, it's a veteran laden team. Every guy in this roster has been around the block for a few seasons. So they're going to rely on that. Just getting them through the tough times. They have a solid team again, but I think they're going to rely heavily on that first line. Guentzel, Point, Kucherov. That's who will make this team go. Because other than that, like Cirelli and Hagel, they do what they do. You bring in Atkinson, hopefully he can, you know, slide in alongside them. But then it's just a group of really solid veterans who at points in their career were really good, but at other points in their career were not so good, hence why they were free agents and they were able to get them in here. So I'm interested to see how this team goes, how they navigate the regular season. This is a perfect example of a team that's built for the playoffs. They'll be successful in the playoffs, but the regular season, it's going to be tough for them. McDonough, you think he wants to play a regular season? You think Kucherov and Hedman and these guys care about the regular season? I expect them to finish this year where they did last year. Fourth in the wild card, and then they'll go to work in the playoffs. But it's slowly but surely starting to see the team regress a little bit and moving away from a true contender into a question mark. Maybe they can contend. We'll see how the season pans out. We'll see how these additions work. And then we'll give you that answer if we put a stamp on them as a Stanley Cup contender. But as it stands right now, they're not, in my eyes. They have Vasilevsky, but he bleeds. You know, he is proving himself to be very susceptible these days. He's not this brick wall that he used to be. So the Lightning, there are some questions there for the Tampa Bay Lightning, but they did have a decent offseason. I think getting rid of Stamkos was a smart move, bringing in a younger Jake Guentzel. Letting go of Sergachev stinks, but he was going to make a lot of money, and Dumba just didn't really fit there. So, yeah, the back end, they'll make some moves. Brisebois has never been one to sit on his hands, but it's not the same Tampa team that we know and love from years past. They're gonna struggle a little bit this year, but when you got Kucherov, and you got Vasilevsky, and you got Point, and you got Hedman, you will win some hockey games. So. It's this division. It's a dangerous division, this Atlantic. All right, moving on. Anything else with Tampa Bay, Tim?
No, I think you're spot on with the first wild card. That's where I have him too.
All right, let's go. The Yzer plan was in full effect this offseason. He was wheeling and dealing in Detroit. He brings in Stanley Cup champion Vladimir Tarasenko, brings in goaltender Cam Talbot, defenseman Gustafson, brings in Campbell. He loses David Perron, Gostisbehere, Sprong, Reimer. Lots of moving parts. I can honestly say all of those players won't really change the outcome of this team. You know, they're not really impactful players. Tarasenko was a million years old coming off a Stanley Cup. He played good, but he won't do much in Detroit. Cam Talbot, who cares? Gustafson, he's a solid defenseman, I guess. Campbell, Jack Campbell? Come on. Like, what are we doing here? Perron, he was good. But yeah, the big question marks are the young kids. Mo Sider, Mason Raymond, they want some money. They're unsigned. Patrick Kane, can he do what he did last year? What are we going to get out of the captain? Dylan Larkin. The Yzer plan, in my eyes, is a sinking ship. Who was I talking to the other day? My dentist. He goes, how long is the Yzer plan going to last? And I'm like, he literally asked me, how long does he have left in Detroit? And I bet you it's 3 to 5 years. I get that sense where he's had enough time to roll over the roster. He's got rid of all the bad contracts that Holland signed. Now, all of a sudden, it's his team. He's brought all these guys in. He has his fingerprints all over this roster, and it's not winning. So I think they will continue to fail. This team doesn't excite me whatsoever. They have some pieces, but as a whole, this is not a good team, Tim. And they did not get better this offseason. If you're hoping for a change because Lucas Raymond all of a sudden takes the next step or Mo Sider takes that next step, they're the players who they're going to be, and they're terrific players, but they're not all of a sudden going to find this next gear. So I think Detroit, it's going to be an okay year for them, but it'll be the exact same year they had last year where they're fighting for a playoff spot. It comes down to the last few weeks and they just miss out. And everybody goes, oh, we are so close next year. The additions of Ben Chiarot year before doesn't help. Jeff Petrie doesn't help. Ole Mata, Eric Gustafson. These are not guys that excite me on the back end. These are guys where I look at this roster and I go, oh, I can exploit him. Yeah. Yeah, we can take advantage of that guy. The only guy that I stay away from is Mo Sider. So you were just driving, and we can get into Mo Sider a lot, but you're really not setting him up for success when you don't give him a young puck-moving defenseman to play with. You're pairing him with a slow, plotting Ben Sherratt, and it forces Mo Sider to do a little bit too much. Mo Sider is not a fleet-footed, puck-moving defenseman that everybody thinks he is. Yes, he has really good puck skills. Really, really good puck skills. You don't want him to be the sole operator for the puck. You want to pair him with a small little guy. Like Chris Pronger played with Niedermeyer. Mo Sider is like a Chris Pronger. That's who he is. He's great with the puck, but he's also a physical defenseman who loves to play to body and loves to take chances. He needs a guy who can take that load of moving the puck and breaking it out and always being worried about getting the puck off of him a little bit so he can play his game a little more. He hasn't been able to do that. So I feel like you're ruining his develop a little bit by forcing him to do too much. And so in my eyes, that's a bad play by Steve Yzerman to put him in that situation. You think it works because they go, yeah, you know, work on his hands, work on this and that, put more on his plate. It has the opposite effect. In Chicago, we had Duncan Keith, but Brent Seabrook, yin and yang. In Minnesota, when I first got there, we had Marek Zidlicky and Brent Burns, or Nick Schultz and Brent Burns. One guy who was a puck mover like Mo Sider and Nick Schultz, who was a security blanket, but could also do a different thing. It doesn't work so far what they've been doing with Mo Sider. So that needs to be addressed. And then the offense as a whole, I know I've been talking a lot about Detroit. I talk about a lot being in Michigan, but this team stinks. It's not where it should be, Tim. Did I miss anything?
Well, yeah, I'm going to take a little bit of a more positive spin on this team. And I think they're one of the harder teams to analyze in this division and maybe in the whole league, because you look at, like we said, they just missed last year. When I say they just missed, I mean it. They were tied with the Capitals in points, and they had more wins than the Capitals, but they lost the tiebreaker, which is the goals for, which I don't know why that's more of a tiebreaker than wins. I don't understand that system. But like, they were right there last year. And no, they wouldn't have beat the Rangers, right? But like, I think they're a little bit closer than maybe you're giving them credit for, especially since I think you want the younger kids to keep getting better. I don't need Lucas Raymond or Sider to take a big leap every year, but they're going to get incrementally better. You still have Larkin in his prime. You have DeBrincat in his prime. You have some good veterans on this team. The goaltending is for sure the weakest part. They're probably the flat tire of this team, but I'm not that down on them. I think one of the things that is fair to criticize is this whole ISR plan. And the part that I'm not clear on is like, where are we? Even if everything's going right, where are we in the plan? Is it phase two, part four? Is it phase five, part six? Like, are we contenders? Are we working toward, like, how soon does he expect to make the playoffs? And is the goal to, like, if they make the playoffs and lose in the first round, that's a step forward compared to the last few years. But is that a win in Yzerman's eyes in the organizational level? It's not clear to me. I assume it's clear to him. I think probably fans in, I don't know, just the hockey world would like to see a little bit more clarity on that. But I do like this team. I like the players on this team. I'm a huge fan of Mo Sider and all that. So I think there's a solid chance they can get that second wild card spot. But I think the criticism that you laid out is fair. There's not a whole lot of players that are like, yeah, you go and watch him every night. And there's not when you look at this division, it's hard to see them getting out of the first round or even making it at best.
Yeah. Nobody excites me other than the first month of the season when DeBrincat was scoring at will. He shut it down after that, Tim. He scored
In fantasy, draft him in the first round. You trade him by Thanksgiving.
Yeah, he scored the same amount of goals he did in the first month versus the next 6 months. He had 27 goals total the whole season. Didn't he score like 16 the first month? He was on fire.
Something crazy like that.
Something incredible. Oh, he's going to get 50. He's going to get 50. Go back and listen to our videos and listen to what I say. I'm like, not a chance. Just wait. I said, just wait. Keep the receipts. I never keep the receipts, but I should have, because people were calling me, you're so dumb. You're so dumb. He finished with 27, everybody. 27. So suck on those eggs. Moving on. Buffalo Sabres. These next two teams are exactly the same as the Detroit Red Wings. Same situation, just a different spot geographically. Buffalo Sabres, ever-present optimism coming into the season. We got young players. This is going to be the year. We're going to take that next step. We're investing in the team. We did it the right way. We drafted. We developed. We didn't spend too much in the offseason this year. Sucked again. Stunk it up again, Buffalo. Couldn't figure it out. I love the Buffalo Sabres. Played there. Some of my best years were in Buffalo. They finished just over 500. It's not good. It's not good enough. And it's just in that sweet spot where you don't get a good draft pick. So your prospect isn't that good. Not a very big difference maker on the roster. And you languish in mediocrity. And that's where they're at right now. They did not take the step to be in the elite teams. And they did not fall enough to be in the lottery. So now they're just in that sweet spot where everybody gets comfortable, but you're never going to be a Stanley Cup contender, but you're not bad enough to be one of those teams that, you know, stinks enough to get a good player. So that's where we're at in Buffalo. We didn't do much last year. We didn't do much the year before. Ever present optimism. But I think that rebuild shine is wearing off. That message of, you know, we're going to do it. This is year. I think the people in Buffalo are starting to get a little fed up with Kevin Adams. They're starting to get a little fed up with this group, this Dahlins, the Tage, the Tux, this group of players needs to do something or heads are going to roll. So what did they do? You're shaking your head, Tim. Am I just being too negative on these guys?
No, it's all fair. I was just thinking we should just, instead of recording this part of the episode, we should have just played whatever we said last summer and say, okay, Power, Dahlin, Cousins, Tage, Byram, maybe not Byram, but like time to show us something, time to take a step forward and progress as a franchise. And it's the same thing this year. And I think the criticism is fair. I'm sure Sabres fans, and I talked to one over the winter of like, I'm sick of these guys. I'm sick of Tuck and Cousins. Like I want them to see something and we're not seeing it. Super down on Owen Power. Let's talk about their offseason. They brought in Cody McLeod, Lafferty, Jason Zucker, out Jeff Skinner. Well, that was a big surprise. They out Gergensen, who has been there for 20 years.
Tim, I don't want to correct you. I played with Cody McLeod for a long time in Buffalo. Great guy. Called him Chief. It's Ryan McLeod.
Okay.
Ryan so McLeod. I just, you know, I hate to do it.
You know, you say some things that are wrong all the time, and I don't interrupt, like Ray Whitney, you said that 15 minutes ago, and I don't want to interrupt the flow of the podcast because it's jarring to listen to. You just keep going.
Isn't that the guy, Ray?
It's Ryan Whitney. So
Spin Chicklets guy.
Yes, Ryan Whitney. Ray Whitney's 10 years older and unrelated. Anyway, it's just Olofsson was out, Just is out. I'm just looking at, like, show me something, please. I'm big on the Sabres this year. I'm going to continue to be optimistic about them. I'm going to continue to go down with this ship or just fly the flag and say, hey, I was right when these guys were down. I'm going to bet on them to sneak into a playoff spot. I think they could get that second wild card. I'm just hoping they can do it. I like their defense. I like their goaltending. I like their forwards. I was looking at their roster this morning. They have this young cluster of super young guys, 18 to 22 range. Like, which one of these can step up and take a top six role, can be a 25 goal scorer or whatever? I'm looking at Quinn, Paterka, Peyton Krebs, Benson. Like, can one of those guys take a step forward and say, hey, this is part of my team. I'm part of the young core now. Because right now they're all kind of, you know, potential, young, excitement. And there's a lot of fans that love these kids. I'm wondering which one of them will take a major step forward this year.
None of them. Someone will. But I just, you know, the optimism surrounding this team after Tage Thompson's breakout season 2 years ago, it was very exciting. You know, there was a lot of positives. You get Owen Power in the draft. You have Dahlin. He's coming into his own. Norris Canada defenseman. Very, very solid. You have a great defense, arguably one of the best young defenses in the league. Grab Bowen Byram. You get him in a trade. But to me, this is trending in the direction of the Ottawa Senators, where they were 2 years ago. When I said, we've seen the best of this team. That's it. We're not getting any better than this. These guys aren't improving their game. And so where do we go from here? If we're getting the best and they're not a playoff team, where do we go? And I think this is where we are with the Buffalo Sabres. And Ottawa did have some good vets on that team. So Buffalo might be lacking that. Some good veteran leadership to kind of mentor these guys. And Jason Zucker is not that guy. He's a good player, but he's not that veteran leader you want on this team. So I think the Bills or the Sabres regress this year. I think they will be a very, very bad team. You know, they'll compete and they'll do their thing, but they will not be a 500 team this year like they were last year. I think they will slip in the standings. They'll be down with the Montreal Canadiens at the bottom of the standings in the Atlantic Division. So unfortunately, the rebuild didn't work. Tage Thompson's under a good contract. Look, I don't mind his number. I don't mind Dylan Cousins' number, but there's not much there. You know, when I look at this lineup, it's good, but it's not great. It's not scaring me. Tage Thompson maybe isn't that superstar we all thought he was. This will be a big year for him. Can he get back to that player? He's 26. Show me something, man. You had that one breakout season. Let's go. Pick it up. You got to have a good year this year. Alex Tuck, he's not getting any younger. So I just am not looking forward to this season for the Buffalo Sabres. I wish I had higher expectations, but I'm really not. All right, moving on. The Ottawa Senators. The aforementioned Ottawa Senators, they made some moves this offseason, bringing in the Boston Bruins goaltender, Linus Ullmark. That was a big move. Getting rid of Corpusalo. Some would say the trade of the offseason. Very, very good trade for the Ottawa Senators. They bring in David Perron. They bring in Nick Cousins, who cares, everyone's most favorite hated player. And they lose Jacob Chychrun. He moves on. But what are your thoughts on the Senators? Is this finally the year, Tim, for the Ottawa Senators to take that next step?
No, I'm ready to say that you were right 2 years ago. Yeah, on paper, like you said, with Buffalo, it's very similar. A strong young core, though not as young. They're not really that young anymore. Nope. Time to show something. Time's running out to show this group has something or not. I think you were right. This just isn't the group for whatever reason. It doesn't work. A lot of it, you could say, was the goaltending. I think the Ullmark thing is huge for them. I don't want to undersell that because they haven't really had, since Brady Tkachuk has been around, they've had some okay goaltenders, but they haven't had any legit star number one guys that I think that could change the way they play and certainly the results of some games. But there's just not enough here that makes me think this is going to be any different. And they're in a tough division. I think they're missing the playoffs by quite a bit yet again. I think they're second to last or third to last at best in the division. One player I'm looking at in particular is Jake Sanderson, who signed that huge ticket, you know, a year and a half ago after a really strong rookie season, 38 points, something like that. And he regressed last year, at least statistically, signed fewer. Still only 22 years old, but he signed like over $8 million a year. He needs to be better. I think them trading Chychrun reflects their belief and trust in him. But there's no reason to think, other than Ullmark, which is a big other than, that this is going to be any different than other years. So if Ullmark, I don't know, revitalizes the team and the way they play and gets them a few more wins, maybe this looks like a different team, but that's a big if. I just don't think this group has it.
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm gonna give him a glimmer of hope based on Linus Ullmark. I think he was a good addition. They really, really struggled last year in the net. You know, Corpusalo stunk. It was so bad. I think they had Cam Talbot. He played for a little bit. It wasn't a strength. It was a huge weakness for the Ottawa Senators. Bringing in him changes the dynamic of that team. Instead of being worried about your goaltender giving up a beach ball, giving up a bad goal, it allows you to play a little more freer. I expect Thomas Shabbat to have a good season this year. I think Sanderson is a good young defenseman. He's only 22. So I think they're going to be scratching the bubble, Tim. I like this team. I think they'll be in the mix for a playoffs position come to the end of the season. All right.
There's one question we ask ourselves every summer. Who finishes higher, the Sabres or the Senators? I'm going to go with Buffalo.
Okay, so last year they were very, very close. The Ottawa Senators took a dump right at the end of the season, and the Buffalo Sabres play a little bit better. They beat them by 6 points. I think Ottawa will – let's just lump in the Red Wings too. The Red Wings, Sabres, and Senators. I think the Senators will finish the highest out of all three.
I think they finished the lowest. I'm going to go Sabres, then Wings, then Senators.
I'll go Senators, Wings, Sabres. Unfortunately, Sabres are my team, but I think they have a lot of soul searching to do. All right, moving on. The last team in the Atlantic, the original six, the Montreal Canadiens, they arguably had the best offseason this offseason. Kent Hughes has done a great job managing this roster with the money, with the pressure, this and that. What did they do this offseason, Tim?
Well, you know, there's a laundry list of names that were in and out. Most of them, you know, role players, depth players, minor leaguers. The big name that they brought in, obviously, was Patrick Laine. Was part of the trade. They traded away Jordan Harris for him. Also out the door was Tanner Pearson, Chris Weidman, a few other names. But it's really, they added Laine and didn't lose a whole lot. So I think when you factor in that, you know, Slutkovsky took a major step forward last year, you expect that again this year. Caulfield and Suzuki, we know what they can do. They have great chemistry. They're a great, you know, top six. I think there's great reason to think that Laine is going to bolster their top six. And if hopefully you can get Kirby Doc in the mix, if he's healthy, there's a whole lot to be excited about, not to compete this year, but for their future, for a lot of young kids kind of coming up and together. Maybe this is Ottawa in 3 years, or maybe this is, I don't know, Tampa in 3 years. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't know how this is going to, you can't predict the future. one kind of X factor here is first Demidov, who they just drafted in the draft. Incredibly skilled Russian. You know, could have gone first overall in a lot of drafts. Probably not going to be ready to play in the NHL. I think he'll be, I don't even know if he's invited to camp or not, if he's just doing the rookie camp. From what I read about him, he's got a lot to fill out the body, the just the North American physicality, all that. The other one that is much closer to being NHL ready is Lane Hutson. I love watching this kid play. You watch him skate, work the blue line, all those things. He's smooth skating. He's smart. He's offensively gifted, very much like a Quinn Hughes type, maybe not quite as fast, but he's so good defensively, not because of physicality or even necessarily because of his stick. It's certainly not size, but it's IQ, it's positioning, it's speed, all those things that makes that prototypical modern defenseman, as you like to say. I think he's going to have a chance to make this roster. He probably expects to right out of the gate. And I just think he's going to be a huge part of this team's rebuild. And I think there's a lot to be excited about. So there's a lot of things here that are great. I don't expect him to compete for a playoff spot, but you don't have to. You just want to see those kids progress.
Yeah. This is one of the rare teams that spends no money on the back end and in between the pipes. Like nothing. They spent almost $13 million on their defense, and they spend $4 million in the goaltending position. It's a very strange roster makeup. Usually teams invest a lot in the back end on the goaltending because they know how important that is. But Montreal, for some odd reason, has just thrown all of their money up front. Line A, Suzuki, Caulfield, Gallagher, Anderson, Dvorak, Armia, Doc, Newhook. They make the lion's share. Like, that's almost $55 million there. So it's an interesting roster construction from Kent Hughes. There are some contracts that he acquired or fell into with Anderson and Gallagher he'd love to get away from. But yeah, Montreal's good. I think in this league, especially this division, you have to be able to defend. Nobody on the back end scares me if I'm an opposing forward. Maybe David Savard.
What about Jack Eye?
He's a good, solid, tough defenseman. But if I'm Nikita Kucherov and I see Jack Eye, I'm like, I'm targeting him. I'm going at him. If I see David Savard, I'm going at him. Lane Hutson, I'm going at him. Justin Barron, same thing. Matheson, yeah. Nobody is a shutdown defenseman on this team. No, nowhere near. So they will be exposed in the back end. They're going to give up a lot of goals. They'll be fun to watch because they do have some really talented forwards. Line A, hopefully he can resurrect his career. And we all saw last year how Slafkovský came on in the end. That first line was incredible. So they'll be fun to watch, but they will be painful to watch at times because they'll be hemmed up in their own zone. They'll be giving up goals. But you can see the pieces, like you mentioned, Tim, of maybe this team is starting to turn the corner. Whereas 3 years ago, it was just a huge question mark. Bad salaries, nothing in the terms of like who is our team? You know, where are we going? You can see it here. They have a good young core. They got some pieces, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So I don't know. They're still going to be bad, like you said, but they won't be as bad as they were last year. I think they'll finish last again, but at least they'll be fun to watch this season, much like they were last year. You know, they didn't have a terrible season. I think Marty St. Louis coached them fairly well, and he got the most out of what he had. So they'll be improved this season. So moving on, Tim, let's do where do we have the division leaders? Who do you got in the Atlantic Division?
Yeah, I'm going to go with one. And again, I don't know why I'm so high on them. I'm usually pretty critical, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm going to have winning the division and winning the Eastern Conference, which means for the first time in a decade, they won't have to play Boston, Tampa, Florida, or any of these juggernauts. They're going to match in the first round against the Detroit or Philly or Washington, whoever squeaks into that second wild card spot, and maybe win a couple of playoff rounds. I think that's a little bit of a bold guess I'm making all at once, but I'm going to pick the Leafs to win the division at least.
The Bruins or the Lightning could be a wild card team, which would be hilarious if they win the division. So they could play those guys in the first round, which would be very appropriate. I think the Panthers will roll this regular season. I think they'll be fantastic. I think they will win the Atlantic, and they won't win the division, but I think they'll win the Atlantic. I think the Lightning will – I think it'll finish the way it did last year. Panthers, Bruins, Leafs, Lightning. I don't think any of the bottom four sneaks up. I think this is a top-heavy division. I think those four will run this division. I think it'll end up the way it ended up last year. Panthers winning, Bruins there. Maybe the Leafs and the Bruins can switch, you know, second and third. The Lightning will finish a distant fourth and finish in that wild card spot. So it's a good division. but it's very top heavy until those bottom four teams figure out their act. All right. Anything else, Tim?
Just the playoff spots. I don't know about spots, but the teams I have making, and I said the other day when we did the Metro that I think the two wild cards are going to come out of this division. I think it's going to be Panthers, Leafs, Bruins, in whatever order, wild card, Lightning. And then I'm going to go, this is my bold prediction, one of them, the Sabres. That's my team to take the second wild card spot.
Yeah, I agree. I think this could be a five playoff team division. So I think the Senators might slip into that playoff spot, but it's good. They're better than the Metro. I think this division, their bottom four is better than the Metro's bottom four at this point. Do the quick hits or move on?
No, nothing that important. A couple of signings, a couple of retirements.
Talk about them later. It's a long episode. It's getting a little long. So anyways, thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll be back next week. Have a good weekend. It's supposed to be beautiful out. So go out, have some fun. The last fleeting glimpses of summer. Have fun. Bye, everybody. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.